Hi, welcome to Content Talks. This is a new 5x5 podcast that explores the fascinating, ever-evolving world of content strategy. Every week, we'll be featuring conversations between me, Christina Halverson, and some very fine folks who have very interesting things to say that will most certainly interest you. And today on our cast, I am more than delighted to welcome Ms. Colleen Jones. Hello, Colleen.
Hello, Christina. Thanks for having me.
Do you mind if I call you Lean?
Not at all. Please
do. Fantastic. Lean is the principal and founder of Content Science. She's a veteran of the interactive industry. She has guided or supported strategic initiatives for global brands, government agencies, boutique brands, and savvy startups. She has presented about content strategy, user experience, and interactive marketing around the world. Lean shares principles for compelling web content in her book, Clout, The Art and Science of Influential Web Content. Lean, I wanted to tell you first thing that your book is going around our office here at Brain Traffic. And just this morning, somebody walked in sort of like holding it up and they were like, I'm really getting into this. There's some good stuff in here. And there were post-it notes. And I was just like, yeah. And they said, great. And then they walked out. So anyway, Brain Traffic, big fans of Clout.
Well, that is wonderful to hear, and I certainly consider that to be a huge, huge compliment.
Great. Well, you know, we're cheap dates over here. So I want to start off a little bit by talking to you about Clout and sort of why you wrote it, how you got into it, and where your background and expertise sort of fed into the terrific insights that you offer up in the book. You know, the first thing I want to start out by asking is this. Your book is specifically addresses how to make content persuasive or influential, which those are two sort of trigger words for a lot of people within user experience. Because, you know, we want to make sure the content is useful and that it is clear and consistent. But persuasive and influential, those are two words that sort of might make one lean towards like, well, we're trying to get them to do something. It's salesy or marketing-y. So tell me, since your background is not necessarily directly in sales and marketing, and you're obviously really passionate about the role of content and the user experience, tell me about why you're specifically interested in this topic, in the art of persuasive content.
Yeah, that is a great point. And I am really interested in this topic of influence and persuasion, because I think there are a lot of myths out there. I think that, you know, the interactive industry, or at least some people in the interactive industry, tend to take a real pushy approach, which of course turns off, you know, people in user experience or technical communication, or, you know, people who see the real value in being clear and straightforward and trustworthy.
Right.
And so what I tried to do in Clout was, you know, connect this idea of being clear and trustworthy and, you know, a source of good information, good content, connect that with influence and persuasion, because they are very much related. And, you know, something that inspired my interest in this was growing up, I watched my dad move from engineering into sales. And it was really interesting to watch, because he has, you know, a personality kind of like mine, not necessarily what you would consider to be a salesy personality. Mm-hmm. He had put in a lot of, time and gained a lot of expertise by being an engineer, and decided to take a risk and try something different and move over to the sales side of engineering. And in his first year, he was number one in sales for his company.
What?
Yeah.
Does he need a job?
We're
always hiring.
Exactly. I could get him into content.
Right, exactly. Why not?
And, you know, some of the factors in his success were things like he really knew his stuff. He really sold people what they needed And he was able to really quickly identify and sense what his customers needed, as opposed to someone who was really coming in from purely a sales perspective.
So somebody also, who is more just like pushing numbers, like this is what my quota is, and I'm just going to sell up until I get to that number.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, one other factor was he could really identify with his customers. He had been in their shoes in a lot of ways. He had been in the trenches of, you know, having to be on call when the plant or the factory goes down because the equipment is broken. And he could really sympathize and empathize with their positions and help them out. So, you know, that is more of a model of successful sales and influence and persuasion that I grew up with. And that's where I'd really like to see the interactive industry go with it.
Well, so then transition over to sort of some of the myths that you think, because again, you know, we constantly in content strategy, we're talking, you know, I think Ian Alexander of Eat Media recently tweeted, you know, let's not immediately give content strategy over to the marketers. Like this is a longer term, this is a longer term effort. This is not a, you know, silver bullet. Of course, he said all that in 140 characters. But so, you know, what is that clash between user experience practitioners and strategists and the idea that content is largely about marketing or mostly about marketing?
Yeah, well, I think that there's a lot happening online in a business relationship. So in other words, the marketing is happening online, the sales happening online, the customer service is happening online. Like every part of a customer or user experience now is happening online. And so you need content for all of those elements of the business, all of those functions.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that you know, we often don't want to talk about the fact that help sections or customer service or, you know, completing transactions or whatever online, in lots of ways, those all feed back directly to the sales lifecycle or the, you know, because that's part of it, right? Is serving the customer, retaining the customer. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you start to, if a business starts to view that kind of content and that part of the experience that way, you know, it's really hard to justify, you know, skimping on thinking through those parts of the experience. So, you know, from a user experience perspective, I see a lot of benefit in embracing content. I see a lot of opportunity. It's kind of a foothold or a gateway into being able to own more and help improve more of the user experience.
Great. So let's back up a little bit then and talk about some of the principles that you share in Clout. You do such a good job of kind of breaking those down and presenting them in a way that so it's a deep, complex subject, this idea of rhetoric and persuasion. So can you give one example of a principle that you focused on and sort of tell us about that and why it's relevant to content strategy folks and user experience designers?
Sure. One principle that is really interesting and exciting is called framing. And it's really, you know, like the name says, like a picture frame. And, you know, like with a picture frame, you have a boundary and you keep some things in the frame and you keep them some things out of the frame. This principle is really about guiding the user or the customer's attention. So how you choose what you leave in and what you leave out is really the source of influence. So an example of that is the Starbucks network. Starbucks recently came out with this new digital network where they feature certain content, content from New York Times, from Yahoo, and other sorts of content providers and sources. Some of the content is specially developed for this Starbucks network, and it's, you know, available to customers in the Starbucks stores. And this Starbucks network is like a frame on the digital world. It's the internet or the web from Starbucks' point of view, and obviously they have in mind that this is a point of view that their customers share as well. So that's just one example of framing, you know, in a really big, large kind of implementation.
So that's really interesting, because obviously another hot topic, as we say in the industry, is this idea of content curation, which is that we can't control, you know, the output of content. So let's put some empowered editors with a point of view in charge of actually sort of curating the best of that content or the most relevant content and delivering it, you know, making it available to their target audience or their existing customers, or even internally within their organization. So it sounds like what Starbucks has done is actually put some sort of editorial infrastructure in place where that person or those people are going out to these sources and curating that content, and that in fact is then being sustained not only by this editorial point of view, but that point of view is being informed by Starbucks brand and brand values and messaging.
Yeah, absolutely. Curation is a big way of applying framing to content. And like you said, it takes that editorial thinking. And so what I think benefits content strategists and editors and anyone with an editorial mindset is this idea that framing, which is grounded in psychology, you know, has they can argue that this is a good, solid foundation. So in other words, you know, curation isn't just something that content people made up. It has some grounding in psychology, and, you know, the art of it is curating in the right way and taking that editorial point of view and shaping it and bringing it to life.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, you know, this is, again, I'm a content person that came out of sales and marketing and then sort of embraced the user experience role in a lot of the projects that I was doing a very long time ago, in the early days, we'll say. But even just hearing, you know, oh, so framing is rooted in psychology. And that means that if we know how people think, that we can influence the way they think, and then they'll do, you know, then we can help like push them to do what we want them to do. Can you give a specific example where, you know, that the art, like the idea of framing, or maybe there's another principle in clout that you'd like to offer up as an example? If I am an employee and I go to my employer's human resources intranet and I'm trying to find out, there's a problem with my paycheck and I need to figure out who to contact. Like where might framing assist? Or if that's a bad example, you can offer another example. But I just am wondering if you can give an example of it where it's not necessarily in a sales environment.
Sure. Another example tied a bit more to themes and key messages than to curation is with Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Great.
Yep. So we worked on a project last year for the Travelers Health website and worked around some content that was basically trying to help anyone traveling internationally figure out what vaccinations they needed to get, mm-hmm. and encourage them to go ahead and get them. So part of what we did for that effort was think about framing. So we didn't want international travelers to think they needed to get tons and tons of shots and vaccinations. You know, that's scary to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, sounds like it could be a lot of extra planning and work. And so we tried to frame the vaccinations and preparing for a safe and healthy trip in terms of the benefits, you know, plan smart so that you can make the most of your trip,
right.
You know, things like that, as opposed to simply providing the information. And we tested that out. We tested that kind of framing against content that didn't have that framing. And the users absolutely preferred and understood the content with the framing a lot better.
That is a really great example. And I was thinking about the example that I was asking for too, or providing, like, that concept then might simply apply to going back to messaging, you know, instead of just providing like a big menu with sort of frequently asked questions that are written like a robot, that it can be, you know, more personal, like,
yeah,
oh, you know, problems with your paycheck are the worst or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can take
yeah.
that copy to the bank, Lane. Great. Good. Well, the other thing that is so amazing about your book is that literally the number of examples that you use to sort of demonstrate each of these principles and even ideas within the principles is just extraordinary. Like, that just, I just feel like you must have been collecting content for years to be able to offer up those many examples, which of course, those are gold to any reader. The other thing though, after you sort of like go through and really do such a beautiful job of illustrating the principles, you then begin to talk about planning for and evaluating content, which might seem like a little bit of a you know, left turn from the title of your book, The Art and Science of Persuasive Content. Can you talk a little bit about why you chose to include that particular topic in the book?
Sure. One of my goals for explaining the principles was to inspire ideas for content. So my hope was, after reading about the principles of influence and persuasion, seeing those examples, you might have lots and lots of ideas for your content. But how much does it stink to have ideas and no way to really make them happen?
It stinks a lot.
It does. And so that, to me, is where planning and evaluation come in. So planning can help you decide which of your ideas are most realistic for you and which aren't. You know, if you have a plan for evaluating your content, you can really learn whether you are in fact influencing. Are you getting the results that you hoped for? And if not, look at some ways to adjust your content and improve the results that you're getting. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to leave people hanging with you know, lots and lots of ideas and no way to take action on them. So that's why I included planning and evaluation.
You know, that's such an interesting thing. I just want to step aside for a minute and just say that's such an interesting and exciting and inspiring thing to me about the content strategy community as a whole, is that these are folks who really seem driven to get things done, like not just to talk yeah. about, you know, oh, here's a strategy of how your content can help your business, but that there's also a real drive to see that through to implementation and to ensure that it's sustainable. So it's, you know, while it might seem to readers, I guess, that this is, oh, it's like an extra little bonus, I think it's completely telling that as sort of one of the leaders within the content strategy field, that this is something that you would offer up to your readers as, okay, great, these are good ideas, let's do something about them, and here are things you need to consider if you're going to, right?
Right, exactly. I see too often people propose good ideas. I've even done it myself. And there's no way to take action. No one really knows how to move forward, take the next steps to make those ideas happen. And that's one of my pet peeves. So I really wanted to be responsible and do my part to help anyone who reads Clout take some action on their content ideas.
That's great. Thank you. So, you know, I wanted to touch base or talk briefly too about, you know, so it, because this is always a question when I was writing content strategy for the web. Okay, we see how this is going to be valuable for practitioners. What kind of a job is it going to do to begin to help leadership and more the executive suite begin to view their content as more than just sort of a commodity that needs to be churned out? How can Clout and the idea of persuasive content, what does that have to offer to executives?
For executives, Clout really shows how content is critical to three of those business R's, reputation, relationships, and results. So on a high level, when you provide good content throughout your relationships with customers or whoever you're trying to reach, you're going to get good results, like more sales, less churn, higher customer satisfaction. And I really think that Clout shows in a bit more detail the connection between content and, you know, how that builds your reputation, how it supports customer relationships, and how all of that comes together to ultimately get business results.
You know what is so amazing to me, and I don't know why it continues to amaze me every time I see an example of it, that literally everything you just said, you could plug in the phrase user experience strategy or user experience design. I think that the UX community, so, you know, all these years ago, and I think still to this day, are really fighting this battle to get organizations to begin to see user experience as a core asset to their business. And, you know, that was, I guess that was something I started saying kind of early on, which is that content is a business asset. Content is something that is going to make or break, in many instances, the user experience or some of the parts of the customer lifecycle and even internal operations that you were just talking about. So let's shift for a minute then and talk about if that's what was going on with user experience 10 years ago, even 12 years ago, are we just at this, you know, it's not that content strategy hasn't been around, it's been around since then, but what do you think about where we are then as a community? Because it's, you know, I keep getting emails of people that are like, wow, I'm a content strategist and I never knew, or this is going to change the way that we do business. And this is, you know, it's like the momentum is still building. I mean, what do you think about where we're going as a community and what people can be doing to sort of participate and help evolve the practice?
I am really excited about where we are. I like your comparison to where user experience was 10 years ago or so. You know, user experience is so much more widespread now than it was 10 years ago. So I think, you know, there's been a lot of progress there. And so I think there are a lot of lessons that we can learn, that the content strategy community can learn from, you know, how user experience made the case, business case for it. I think, you know, the combination of pilot projects and case studies, and then, you know, more research kind of supporting or pointing out the value that content strategy can bring. I think those sorts of efforts will help tremendously. I saw them help with the user experience, and I have a lot of confidence in that. I think that what's tough for user experience and content strategy is that it is a bit conceptual and abstract. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of like that, that is kind of how I think.
But I don't know if that's, I mean, you do, but you're also one of the most pragmatic people I've ever met.
Yeah. I compensate for it. Because I know that
I compensate for it with my to-do lists.
Because that's not how the business world thinks. And, right. You know, it is, I think, exciting to see already the case studies that are coming out of the content strategy community.
Yeah, you know, we're going to have like 10 case studies at Confab in May.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. Yeah. That's going to go a really long way, in my opinion, to really getting everyone from executives to you know, marketing managers, to, you know, sales directors, to really get their attention and see, what kinds of results, what kinds of benefits they could get out of content strategy.
Right. Exactly. So, Colleen, you were at the very first content strategy sort of meetup, I guess. We called it the consortium, and it was in March of 2009?
It was
when we all sort of sat down. There were 20 of us, and we sat down around a table, and around the room, and we were just like, "Wow, there's 9." I've never been in a room where other people speak the same language as I do. But so that was sort of a watershed event in a lot of ways, and a lot of the people who are kind of recognized as leaders in the content strategy practice or community were at that consortium. How has your perspective on content strategy shifted?
Well, I just can't believe it's been almost 2 years now since that day in that room. And I would say my perspective has evolved quite a bit. And probably the two biggest ways my perspective has grown or developed is with connection and community. So by connection, I mean the connection between content and content decisions and lots of other decisions that happen in a business, technology, design, and marketing decisions. That connection is crystal clear to me now, whereas I would say 2 years ago, I was feeling the pain points of it, kind of starting to recognize the connection. But now I can see that connection and better see problems that are related to content, mm-hmm. and better suggest realistic solutions. For example, last year, I worked on a tough intranet project. We proposed lots of good user experience ideas, good content ideas, and the client loved them. But we ran into roadblocks with implementation. And it turned out in that particular case, the client's data and content that we were working with, that data and content was in or were in a lot of different systems, from SharePoint mm-hmm. sites to databases to whatever, you name it. And, you know, obviously they weren't going to put everything into one nice, neat enterprise content system or one ginormous database or anything like that. And so I did a little investigation and, you know, talked with some folks in the content strategy community, including Rahel Bailey, and, you know, got my attention turned to content management interoperability service. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a huge help to kind of bridging the gap between these great ideas that we had into actually making them implementable, actually helping, you know, the IT department look into some possible solutions to make it happen. So, you know, that to me was hugely valuable and just an example of that connection between content and the user experience and the technology. And so the other thing I've been really excited to see is the thriving content strategy community. You know, I see thoughtful discussions on the content strategy Google group, you know, really great blog posts and articles and industry publications, and you know, the events this year with Confab and Content Strategy Forum. I think it would have been hard for me to imagine that happening 2 years ago, quite frankly, and I'm just delighted to see it.
Well, and that's you've played a big role in that. I mean, you are a real driving force for getting you're one of the founders of the Atlanta. Oh, see, people in the world. Did you just hear my Outlook reminder go off?
No, I didn't.
Oh, well, see, now everybody knows my Outlook reminder just went off and it thought it recorded. Now I completely forgot what I was going to say.
Atlanta content strategy.
Just FYI, I gap out like that in front of crowds of like 500 people. So that's welcome to my radio show. Yeah. So, but you were one of the founders of the Atlanta Content Strategy Meetup, and you in New York kind of have a, you know, ongoing battle between who was first in the country. So you've definitely played a big role in sort of setting the stage for other folks all over the world to begin to set up these meetups and start the conversation within their own communities. So thank you.
You are welcome.
For that.
Yeah, that's been fun.
Yeah. Now, the other big, we've been calling it the content strategy, the content strategy meetup of the year or whatever is going to be at Confab, the content strategy conference that's being hosted by Brain Traffic here in Minneapolis, May 9th through 11th. You're going to be there for our author event, right?
I will be there.
Great.
And I'm psyched. You know, everyone from Jenny Reddish to Aaron Kassane will be there.
Yep. And Joe Polizzi and Rockley. Yeah, we've got a lot of pretty great folks who are going to be signing books and schmoozing and being stared at in awe like the celebrities they are.
I love it.
Yeah. So, Colleen, our time's up, but thank you so very much for joining me on one of these early and still being fine-tuned Content Talks podcast episodes. Folks, you can pick up Colleen's Jones really just about at any major bookstore. In fact, yesterday I tweeted that someone found my book. They told me they found my book in some bookstore in Union Square, but oh, right next to my book was Clout. And somehow I was far more excited to see that. So, you know, buy many copies today. Colleen, where can people find you on Twitter?
Lean Jones, LEENJONES.
Great. And you can find me at Halverson on Twitter. And thanks so much. And we'll see you next time.